Okay, so have you heard about this? Frozen light.
Frozen light.
Yeah, it sounds like something you'd read in like a science fiction book,
Which
right?
does sound pretty futuristic.
But it's actually a real thing that scientists have been working on.
Really?
Yeah, and today we're going to be diving deep into how they've managed to do it.
I'm intrigued already.
I am too, and I'm really excited to talk to you about it today. So what scientists have essentially figured out is how to get light to behave kind of like a solid.
Wait a minute, how can you make light, which is like the epitome of speed and movement,
Yeah.
act like something solid?
Right, that's the crazy part.
Yeah.
And not only that, but this solid light can also flow without any friction, like a superfluid.
Oh, okay, now you've really lost me. How can something be solid and flow without friction at the same time? That seems impossible.
Yeah, I know, it's mind-blowing. And to understand how it works, we're going to be looking at some fascinating research by a team in Italy. They actually made this happen by firing lasers at these really precisely made semiconductor structures.
Lasers and semiconductors, huh? This is getting more and more sci-fi by the minute.
It really is. And it reminded me of something I was reading in Rick Lofton's Seven Colonies series. He imagined a world where they use something called super solid photons for all sorts of things. Like they had them in clothes and even in 4D advertisements.
That's pretty wild. So this science fiction author basically predicted this scientific breakthrough.
Well, he kind of did. In the book, Lofton even mentions that when scientists actually developed something called Polariton displacement technology back in 2025, it felt like some of the stuff he dreamed up in his stories was becoming real.
Wow, so science fiction inspiring real science. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it really is. It shows how sometimes these imaginative ideas can actually pave the way for real scientific discoveries. So what we're going to try and do today is break down this whole frozen light thing, understand the science behind it without getting too bogged down in all the technical jargon, and figure out what it all means.
Sounds like a plan. I'm ready to have my mind blown.
Me too. So first things first, how do you even begin to freeze something that's literally the fastest thing in the universe?
Yeah, that's a great question. The key here is that they're not actually freezing light in the way we think of water turning to ice. It's not about stopping photons completely in their tracks.
So what are they doing then?
What they've achieved is getting these photons to act like they're in a super solid state.
Super solid state. What does that even mean?
Okay, so imagine a material that has the structure of a solid, like a crystal where the atoms are arranged in a specific repeating pattern, but this material can also flow perfectly without any resistance, like a liquid. That's basically what a super solid is.
Okay, I think I'm starting to get it.
Yeah.
So, how do they manage to do this with light?
Well, the experiment was led by Davide Nigro from the University of Pavia and Antonio Gianfate from CNR Nanotech in Italy. What they did was they fired a laser beam at a specially designed structure made from a material called gallium arsenide.
Gallium arsenide.
You
That
went
sounds
for her
pretty
off, though.
technical.
It is. It's a type of semiconductor material, which basically means it has specific electrical properties that make it really good for interacting with light at a very precise level.
So why is gallium arsenide so important for this experiment?
Because it allows the scientists to control how light behaves at a really, really tiny scale, like at the level of individual photons.
Okay, so they have their laser and their gallium arsenide. What happens next?
All right, so this is where things get really interesting. When the laser beam hits the gallium arsenide, the photons in the light start interacting with things called excitons inside the material. Yeah,
Excitons.
basically, excitons are these pairs of an electron and a hole where an electron should be. They're sort of bound together. And when a photon hits the gallium arsenide, it can create one of these excitons.
So it's like the photon is getting absorbed by the material and creating this exciting thing.
Exactly. And then here's the really cool part. The photon and the excitant can actually combine to form a new kind of particle called a
A
polariton.
polariton. So it's like a mix of light and matter.
You got it. It's this weird hybrid particle that has properties of both light and matter.
That is strange.
Oh.
Okay, so they've created these polaritons. Now, how do they get them to act like a super solid?
Well, the researchers found that as they increased the number of polaritons in the gallium arsenide, something really interesting happened.
What happened?
They started to see these things called satellite condensates forming around the main group of polaritons.
Satellite condensates.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of like planets orbiting a star.
Yeah, it's a good analogy. Basically, it's like these little clusters of polaritons forming around the main bunch, and this is a key sign that the polaritons have transitioned into this super solid state.
So these little clusters are proof that you've got a super solid.
It's one of the pieces of evidence, and it's
What is
important to point out that this isn't like the normal kind of Bose-Einstein condensate that you might have heard of, which is made purely of photons. This is something different. It's showing that under very specific conditions, These light matter polaritons can behave like a super solid.
Okay, so we've got photons turning into polaritons and then forming these clusters. But I'm still a bit fuzzy on how they actually create this super solid light in the lab. Can we walk through the steps?
Absolutely. So first off, the material itself is really important. They usually use gallium arsenide, but sometimes they'll use a similar compound called aluminum gallium arsenide.
Right, the semiconductor.
Exactly. But it's not just a plain piece of semiconductor. They have to shape it in a very specific way. They create these tiny, tiny ridges on its surface, almost like a microscopic grating.
So like a miniature obstacle course for the light.
Kind of. It's all about controlling the movement of the photons at a really fine scale.
Okay, that's step one. What's next?
Well, then they shine the laser light onto this specially structured semiconductor.
Right, so the photons from the laser are hitting the material.
And remember when the photons hit the semiconductor, they interact with those excitons, the electron hole pairs we talked about?
Yeah.
And that's what kicks off the formation of the polaritons. The light and the matter are coupling together to create these new hybrid particles.
So the polaritons are born. Okay, what happens to them?
Well, now the scientists have to get really clever. They manipulate these polaritons and force them into specific quantum states within the semiconductor structure.
Quantum states. You're going to have to explain that one.
Okay, so think of it like this. Every particle, like an electron or a photon, can exist in different energy levels or states. It's like a ladder with different rungs. And the scientists can use various techniques to push the polaritons into specific energy levels on this ladder.
So they're controlling the energy of these polaritons.
Exactly. And initially, most of the polaritons tend to be in what's called a zero momentum state, which is kind of like the lowest rung on the ladder. But as they create more and more polaritons, this state gets filled up. It's like there's no more room on that rung.
So what happens when it gets full?
Well, when that happens, pairs of photons start to jump up to the next rung on the ladder. They transition into a slightly higher energy state, one with a bit of momentum.
Okay, so they're moving up to a higher energy level.
And when they do that, they form something called a bound state in the continuum, or BC.
Or BC.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mouthful. But essentially, it's a special kind of quantum state where the polaritons are kind of trapped, even though they have enough energy to escape.
Trapped? That seems kind of counterintuitive.
It is. It's like being in a room with an open door, but for some reason you just can't leave.
Okay. That's pretty weird.
Yeah.
But how does this BIC thing help create this super solid?
Well, once the polaritons are in this BIC state, the physical structure of the semiconductor comes into play again. Remember those tiny ridges we talked about?
Yeah.
Those ridges act like walls. They confine the polaritons and force them to arrange themselves in a specific pattern.
So they're like herding the polaritons into a specific formation.
Exactly. And this formation is what allows the system to behave both like a solid with a fixed structure and like a superfluid that can flow without any friction.
So it's the combination of the BIC and the semiconductor structure that does the trick.
Precisely. It's a really delicate and intricate process.
This is all very impressive. But how do the researchers actually know that they've created this super solid light? Can they see it?
Well, they can't see it directly. It's happening in a microscopic scale. But they have some really clever techniques for detecting it. One of the main methods they use is called interferometry.
Interferometry.
Yeah, it's a way of measuring really subtle changes in light waves by looking for interference patterns. And what they found is that in super solid light, there's a specific pattern in how the photons are distributed in space.
A pattern in the light itself.
Yeah, it's called spatial modulation. And it means that the density of photons varies in a regular repeating way. It's like seeing a grid or a lattice structure, but made of light.
Wow, so they're actually detecting a pattern in the light density that shows it's behaving like a solid.
Exactly. It's one of the key signatures of a super solid state. And the fact that they can create this super solid using light rather than having to cool atoms down to ridiculously low temperatures like they do with traditional supersolids is a huge deal.
Why is that?
Well, it means that studying supersolids becomes much more accessible and potentially much easier to scale up. You don't need these massive, complicated cooling systems. You can do it with light and semiconductors.
So this could really open up new possibilities for research.
Absolutely. It's a game changer.
Okay, so now we're getting into the really mind-bending stuff. The unique properties of supersolid light. What does it mean for something to be both solid and liquid at the same time?
Well, on the one hand, this material has a crystalline structure like we talked about. It has this repeating pattern in space, just like a regular solid. but at the same time, it can flow without any resistance, just like a superfluid. It's like having a river that's frozen solid, but the ice can somehow move without melting.
That is so counterintuitive.
Yeah.
And it really challenges our whole understanding of what light is, doesn't it?
It definitely does. We tend to think of light as either a wave or a particle, but this super solid light doesn't fit neatly into either of those categories. It's something entirely new.
So it's forcing us to rethink our basic ideas about light.
And as you mentioned before, traditionally creating a super solid required cooling things down to incredibly low temperatures, just a tiny fraction of a degree above absolute zero. But with super solid light, they're achieving it using photonic semiconductors at much more manageable temperatures.
So it's not just a scientific curiosity, it's something that could have practical applications.
Definitely. And the unique features of super solid light are what make it so exciting. First, you have this dual nature, the fact that it can act like a solid and a superfluid at the same time. Then you have the fact that it's achieved through these really specific quantum mechanical interactions between light and matter, which leads to the creation of these polaritons. And then you have the fact that it's relatively easy to create using these photonic semiconductors compared to traditional super solids. And finally, the potential applications are just huge. We could see advancements in quantum computing, new materials, science, and all sorts of new optical technologies.
Okay, so we have this crazy blend of solid and superfluid behavior, all thanks to these polaritons inside a semiconductor.
Yeah.
But what is it about these polaritons that allows them to do this? How does being a hybrid of light and matter give them this dual nature?
Well, the key is in how these polaritons are formed. When you combine a photon with an excitant inside the semiconductor, you create a particle that has properties of both light and matter.
Right, we talked about that earlier.
And the matter component, the excitant, allows the polaritons to interact with each other. These interactions are what cause them to spontaneously arrange themselves into a crystalline structure, a regular repeating pattern in space.
So it's like the excitons are making the polaritons behave like a solid.
Exactly. And the structure of the semiconductor itself also plays a role. It acts like a template guiding the polaritons into this ordered arrangement. And this spatial modulation of density, this repeating pattern in how the photons are distributed, is a defining characteristic of a solid.
So the semiconductor helps create the solid-like behavior. But where does the superfluidity come from? How can something with a fixed structure also flow without any resistance?
Well, that's where the light component of the polaritons comes in. Because they're still partly light, they can maintain something called quantum coherence over relatively long distances.
Quantum coherence.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky concept, but basically it means that the polaritons are all acting in sync with each other. They're all vibrating at the same frequency and moving in the same direction.
So they're like a perfectly synchronized marching band.
Exactly. And this coherence is what allows them to flow without any friction. It's like they're all moving together as one unified entity rather than a bunch of individual particles bumping into each other.
So it's the combination of the matter component giving them structure and the light component giving them coherence that allows them to be both solid and superfluid.
That's it. It's a delicate balance between these two seemingly contradictory properties.
And it all happens because we're manipulating light and matter at this incredibly tiny quantum level.
It's really pushing the boundaries of what we thought was possible.
So we've got this super solid light that can flow without friction. But how does being in this state change how light behaves? Does it affect its optical properties?
Absolutely. It has some really interesting effects on how light interacts with the world. For example, the fact that the polaritons maintain this quantum coherence is really important for things like quantum computing and photonics.
Why is that?
Well, coherence means that the light waves are all in phase with each other. They're all lined up and moving together. And that's crucial for applications where you need to control light with extreme precision, like in quantum computers where information is stored and processed using light.
So coherence basically makes the light more stable and predictable.
Exactly. And the periodic structure of the supersolid, the fact that it has this repeating pattern in space, can also lead to some really interesting optical effects.
Like what?
Well, for instance, you could see enhanced optical nonlinearity, which means that the light interacts with itself and other materials in much stronger and more complex ways than it normally would.
So it could change how light interacts with matter.
Definitely. And it could also create unique scattering patterns when light passes through the super solid.
Scattering patterns.
Yeah, basically, it's how the light is deflected and spread out when it hits the material. And the regular structure of the super solid can create some really unusual and potentially useful scattering patterns.
Okay, so the solid-like properties of super solid light can change how it interacts with matter.
Yeah.
But what about the superfluid properties? Do those have any interesting effects?
Absolutely. One of the most exciting possibilities is that superfluid light could flow through obstacles without experiencing any resistance or loss of energy.
Wait, so it could pass through things without being affected by them?
Exactly. In normal circumstances, when light hits an obstacle, it gets scattered or absorbed, which reduces its intensity. But superfluid light could potentially bypass those obstacles completely.
That sounds like it could be revolutionary for things like optical computing and communications.
It really could. Imagine being able to transmit light signals over long distances without any loss of information or energy.
That would be incredible. Are there any other potential applications that scientists are excited about?
Well, the field is still very young, but some researchers believe that super solid light could lead to the development of entirely new types of lasers and optical devices.
That's amazing. So we've talked about how they create super solid light and some of its amazing properties. But what about the theory behind it all? How do scientists explain this strange behavior?
Well, the theoretical models focus on the fundamental interaction between photons and matter inside the semiconductor. It's all about understanding how those two things are coupled together to create these polaritons.
So it's like a dance between light and matter.
Exactly. And the models explain how as you increase the number of photons in the system, they start to occupy different energy levels within the semiconductor.
Right, like we talked about with the zero momentum state and the Bic.
And as those lower energy levels get filled up, the models predict that photons will start to transition into higher energy states with a bit of momentum. And that's what leads to the formation of those satellite condensates that we talked about earlier.
So the theory predicted those little clusters.
It did. And it also predicted the spatial modulation in photon density that the researchers observed experimentally, which is one of the hallmarks of a super solid state.
So the experiments are backing up the theory.
They are, which is always a good sign. And one of the interesting things that the models have shown is that unlike traditional super solids, which are typically in a state of equilibrium, super solid light is what's called a non-equilibrium system.
Non-equilibrium.
Yeah. It means that it needs a constant input of energy to maintain its super solid state. In this case, that energy comes from the laser. If you turn off the laser, the super solid state collapses.
So it's not a static state. It's dynamic and constantly changing.
Exactly. And that makes it even more interesting from a theoretical perspective because you have to take into account this constant flow of energy through the system.
Okay, so we've talked about super solids and we've talked about Bose-Einstein condensates. Are those two things the same?
They're similar in that they both involve a large number of particles occupying the same quantum state. But there's a key difference. Super solids have this added element of spatial ordering. They have a fixed structure in space, whereas Bose-Einstein condensates do not.
So it's like the difference between a liquid and a solid.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that makes super solid light so fascinating. It's this hybrid state that combines properties of both.
Now, one thing that always comes up when you talk about super solids is temperature. Traditional super solids need to be cooled down to extremely low temperatures, close to absolute zero. What about super solid light? Does it need to be super cold too?
That's a great question. And the answer is no, super solid light doesn't rely on extremely low temperatures in the same way that traditional super solids do.
So why is that? Why don't you need to freeze it?
Well, with traditional super solids, you need those ultra low temperatures to get all the atoms to behave in the same way. You need to basically eliminate all their thermal energy so they can settle into this super solid state.
So it's like getting a bunch of rowdy kids to calm down and stand in a line.
Yeah, kind of. You need to take away all their energy. But with super solid light, you're not relying on temperature to control the behavior of the particles. You're using these specially designed semiconductor structures and the interaction between light and matter to create the super solid state.
So it's a completely different approach.
Exactly.
No.
And it means that you can create super solid light at much more reasonable temperatures, which makes it much easier to study and potentially to use in practical applications.
So it's a much more accessible form of super solidity.
It really is. And that's what makes it so exciting.
Okay, so to sum up what we've learned today, scientists have managed to create something truly amazing. Light that can act like both a solid and a superfluid. And they've done it not by freezing it, but by carefully manipulating photons at a quantum level using lasers and semiconductors.
And this discovery is not just a scientific curiosity. It has the potential to revolutionize fields like quantum computing materials, science, and optics. It's opening up entirely new avenues for exploring the fundamental nature of light and matter.
And for you, our listener, I hope this deep dive has given you a glimpse into the mind-blowing world of quantum physics. It's a realm where the impossible seems to become possible, and when our understanding of the universe is constantly being challenged and expanded.
And as we continue to probe deeper into the quantum world, who knows what other amazing discoveries await us? Perhaps we'll find that even more of our fundamental assumptions about the nature of reality need to be revisited.
It's a tantalizing thought. And as we wrap up today, I'd like to leave you with a question to ponder. What are the implications of being able to manipulate matter and energy at this incredibly precise quantum level? How might it change our world in the years to come? Something worth thinking about.
It certainly is. The future of quantum technology is full of possibilities. And who knows, maybe one day we'll be wearing clothes made of super solid photons, just like in Rick Lofton's books.
That would be amazing. Until then, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep wondering, because that's what drives scientific progress. And who knows what incredible breakthroughs we might witness in our lifetime.
I couldn't agree more. Thanks for having me on the show. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thanks for joining me. And to all our listeners, thanks for tuning in to The Deep Dive.